Hey, Perry, it's almost New Year's, and I was wondering, what are you hoping for in 2018?
Well, I would really like a lounge chair close to the pool when we land in San Diego in 2 weeks.
Perry, that's not what I'm asking.
Oh, these pears.
Hey, Perry, I think what the Medlars want to know is, do you have any hopes in 2018 beyond our upcoming trip to San Diego?
Oh, right. Well, you know, I always hope for the same thing every year.
What's that, Perry?
That everyone plants at least one Perry pear tree. Although, of course, I want more. A lot more. But that is not all.
Here we go.
It is my hope that the existing Perry pear trees out there in Pearville,
Perry,
or Ciderville, if you will, are protected. As you know, there are too many nincompoops who still do not know what a Perry pear is and what we can do.
That is so true with Medlars too. People just don't understand palms.
Right. Now, does anyone know where my all-natural sunblock is? Southern California can be quite hot for this pear, even in January.
These pears.
Welcome to Cider Chat. This is episode 109. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And earlier, as we entered into this episode, you heard from the Talking Palms, both the Medlars, Perry Pear, and Mr. Quince. This week, we're going to be bringing you a special edition of Cider Chat, and it'll be with Chad Cook, who was also in episode 104. He was talking about the ciders that he makes at Cider Hill Cellars in Amesbury, Massachusetts. And this additional piece here is going to be on ice cider, which is such a perfect all-year-round aperitif, but especially this time of year when it's cold out in the Northern Hemisphere and makers around the globe are thinking, it's time to make some ice cider. So hold on to your glass. We're going to be with that chat in just a moment. Well, as you heard myself and the Medlars and Perry Pear and Mr. Quince talking, I'm going to be back out in California, Southern California, coming right up in January. Well, what can I say? My family loves to get married. I'm going to another wedding because that's what you do. It's a busy thing to keep on going out for weddings in California, but I wouldn't miss it for all the world. That means that I'm going to be landing in San Diego and going out to an area a little outside of San Diego, but hoping to catch up on some cider while I'm there, and once again, sneaking away. So stay tuned to that. If you are a San Diego cider maker and you want to get a hold of me and set up a little chat, do that now if you can. Because it's always hard for me to kind of escape away from family, but I try to do my best. So really stoked for that. And then I'll be returning, and in a short period of time, I'm going to be heading down to Baltimore, Maryland for CiderCon. And I suspect that some of you out there in Ciderville listening right now are going to be at CiderCon too. And I can't wait. I have a list of people that I'm going to be doing a chat with. There is just a couple openings available, and it's going to be a really eventful time. So my tip of the week for CiderCon, which I've been doing every single week leading up here, is to really pay attention to upcoming events that are going to be happening. I had a fortunate experience of seeing Dan Shelton of the Shelton Brothers recently. He founded the Shelton Brothers Importers many years ago and was really focusing on beer. And really only recently, I would say probably in the past, it feels like 3, maybe 4 years, Shelton Brothers started also taking on cideries, both in the U.S. and globally. And Dan is just a really outstanding guy, and his wife, Tessa. They just had a baby last year, been really busy with that, and has a great team of folks that work for the Shelton Brothers. And what I hear is that they're going to be doing some events potentially in Baltimore. So stay tuned for that, and I'll roll out that info as I find out about it too. And there's also what is being called Baltimore Cider Week. And that's the first time I've ever seen that on the map. And they're going to be doing that in conjunction with CiderCon happening. So whether you are in the area just because you live around there and there's a lot of great cideries that are happening, there's tours that are going to be happening during CiderCon out to some of the local cideries, or you are a part of the cider trade coming in, you know, start taking note of this, because nothing worse than landing in a city that you're not familiar with and saying, okay, well, I'm a little overwhelmed. Where do I go? Because it could be really overwhelming, CiderCon. I mean, there's like a lot of people that go to it. So looking forward to that, and just rolling into 2018. And because of that, I want to also mention to you that if you didn't listen to last week's chat, which was 108 with the alcohol professor on cider competitions and judging, you might want to listen to that, especially if you are in the commercial trade of cider making, because that was with Adam Levy, who runs competitions around the world. And there's an upcoming competition on February 11th, 2018. Adam's going to be at CiderCon. You could bring your cider to CiderCon. That will allow you to avoid the shipping expense, and you could submit it both in the New York International competition that's taking place and one that he's doing in Berlin. And what's unique about these competitions is that it uses only people who are trade buyers as judges. Very unique. So do listen to that episode I had with Adam. You want to scroll in to start the chat. I think it starts about 8 minutes in or so into last week's episode. And stay tuned for that. There'll be links in the show notes on how you can find more about this competition, which is currently called the New York International Beer Competition. And if there's enough entries, he's going to open one called the New York International Cider Competition. And that would be a big score, I think, for cider around the world. So do check out that episode 104 with Adam Levy, the alcohol professor. If you haven't had a chance to listen to Chad Cook's episode, which was number 104, he is the head cider maker at Cider Hill Cellars, which is in Amesbury, Massachusetts. And in that chat, it was just loaded with lots of bomber handholds. That's a kind of a rock climbing term, you know, when you really kind of sink in on the cliff and it's like the hallelujah hold when you just need it. Well, he had a lot of that in terms of cider making. He's pretty geeked out. It was really a wonderful chat. They're making some nice ciders at this brand new cidery that really just opened this past May 2017. But Chad is not new to this. He's a multi-generational orchard apple person. His family's been doing that for many, many years, both his grandparents and his parents. And they, like many farmers, kind of segued and kind of saw that value-added product by making cider. Well, in that chat, I pulled out this little tidbit that you're going to hear now because it's specific to ice cider. And of course, like Chad and so many people around the world, we often talk about Eleanor Ledger, who's going to be coming on an upcoming cider chat. So that'll be going out before CiderCon. If all things go well when I record the chat with her, I think in like another week. But he referred to Eleanor because she is of Eden specialty ciders up in Newport, Vermont. And Eleanor is right over the border from Quebec. And we know that that's really like the heartland of ice cider. And I'm not going to say this gentleman's name correctly, but it's Christian Barmouthu. I'm sorry. I feel really bad. I should have practiced that, but I'm running out of time, so I'm not going to practice it. Anyways, I have the link in the show notes to this guy. He is the founder of ice cider. So if you didn't know that, that's pretty cool. It's not something that kind of was relatively popped out of the world. It really started in Canada. So, oh, Canada, we love you for that. And certainly Eleanor had the benefit of being close to Canada. I remember traveling up there as a kid, seeing cider everywhere. And little did I know at that point it was going to be ice cider coming down the pike. And ice cider is unique because the way that you make ice cider is you freeze the fresh pressed apple juice and you extract the water from the apple juice, because there's water in all apples, and to a greater or lesser degree, depending upon the processing of the apples. What I mean is it a modern or traditional orchard that really has a lot of weight of water. So you extract that water, and you just kind of get the pure apple juice. So it's a higher density of sugar. And we were going to talk a little bit with Chad about the ratio that he's getting, how he extracts the water, what temperature he uses, and also another kind of difficulty that a lot of new cider makers who are playing with this particular type of technique on how to stop fermentation of an ice cider. So that is also a key piece, too, of this upcoming chat. And the neat thing about ice cider, and again, we'll talk about this, but what I really want to bring home here is that ice cider is a great drink to make with culinary apples. And so that's why you're seeing ice cider being made in Sweden, which I talked about last week, Rålambshult cider. They have a lot of culinary apples. They're also bringing in cider apples, too. It's not that you can't do that. But in the U.S. and even in Canada, there's a lot of culinary apples, and it's an exquisite blend with that. So he's going to talk about what apples they were using and where they're going. It's a shorter chat, but it is so chock full of info that you're probably going to want to pull out your pen. Maybe listen to it twice. So we're going to go roll into that chat now, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I did too. So let's grab that glass, fill it full, and join this chat with Chad Cook of Cider Hill Cellars in Amesbury, Massachusetts. So I'd like to talk to you a little bit about that cider. This was in the home,
the home cider makers category for ice cider.
In Franklin County Fair, or was it the Cider Days?
Cider Days.
And so you, how did you win that? Because this was before you became commercial.
Yeah.
In 2014, you said.
Yep. Yeah, it was the 2014 competition.
So, love each other.
You know,
love each other, not silly face.
We were trying to decide if we wanted to do this commercially, and the goal was to essentially put a cider out there and see if it would win a gold medal, and that would sort of justify to us, okay, maybe we do know what we're doing here. And so, yeah, I just, I was speaking earlier about reverse engineering a bunch of ice ciders.
Right.
We went out and we found the numbers for what would be a great ice cider. And then when we went to Franklin County Cider Days in 2013 and tried all of the ciders, or maybe it was 2012, we tried all of the ciders at the cider salon.
Yeah.
And we came to Eden's Northern Spy barrel-aged ice cider.
It
just blew our minds. We were saying, oh my goodness, this is what we were looking for.
Yes, right on.
People will get into this even if they don't like the dry stuff.
Yeah.
So we wanted to make an ice cider and have it as a product. And it said it right there, Northern Spy, right on the bottle. So we knew what apple to use. We weren't getting very creative back then. but...
Did you do barrel aging on that one?
I did not. We have a barrel right now going of this
batch
of winter.
You do? Okay, I was wondering if you're doing any barrel aging.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Gotta love that.
Oh, it was so good. I could not... I mean, I'll probably end up drinking half of it for myself, but...
well, hey.
No, we'll sell some. But for the ice cider, we knew that Northern Spy would make a good ice cider because we just drank one and it was fantastic.
Mm.
And... You know, we had to find the numbers that we were looking for, which essentially, when you're making a single variety cider, you don't have too much leeway with. Ours came out really acidic, so I did use 71B, the malic acid reducing yeast.
Yeah, love that 71B.
Yeah, and so I wasn't too sure how to control it, but I ended up freezing and thawing, I think it was 120 gallons, and we made 3 45-gallon batches or somewhere around there. You might have even frozen more than that to get 45 gallons, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you get
you
get a 4-to-1 reduction if you really do it right.
15 gallons for 15 gallons, yeah. 4-to-1. For 4 gallons to get 1 gallon?
Yep. Yeah, you end up.
I thought you needed more than 4 gallons. But
it depends if you
what the cider is.
If you thaw it right above freezing, the water likes to stay as ice. A lot of people, when they make ice cider at home, I think they'll freeze their cider, pull it out, and do it on the countertop or something.
Yeah.
But the water at 65 degrees is going to start melting too. So we'll pull our cider out of a freezer and put it into a cooler at 34 degrees.
And then drop it down. And then he thought, brilliant.
Yeah, it takes a week to thaw that way, but we leave clear bricks of ice behind and get everything that we can.
Amazing tip there.
Yeah.
Nice.
So we started, the first batch we ever did with Franklin County Cider Days was 5-to-1. But we get that down to 4-to-1, no problem now. And if you have crazy sugary cider, you can do 3-to-1 if you really, really try.
Good tip.
Yep.
Good tip to know, because I haven't played with ice ciders.
We never even talked about how to stop an ice cider fermentation.
How do you stop an ice cider fermentation?
All right.
I really want to know that.
Yeah, for sure. So, okay, this...
Did you want to talk to this young lady here?
Oh, I'll say hi to Nikki later.
Okay.
I saw her a couple days ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're just best friends for a long, long time.
Cool.
So for ice cider... There's a couple ways you can make them. You can make them sulfite free.
Mm-hmm.
You can make them with sulfites. You can make them with sulfite and sorbate, sterile filtration. There's a whole range of ways to stop the fermentation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think probably what a lot of people are aiming to do is they're aiming for a strong and healthy fermentation down to their target gravity, and then they're racing to stop it on time. Where gravity bricks, there's the beer talking. But what I like to do is I like to have our ice cider barely trickling along by the time it's ready to be stopped.
Mm-hmm.
I do not
want
it. You
talked about the yeast.
Yeah.
That's what you mentioned earlier. You're picking a yeast that kind of basically trickles out once it goes.
Yeah, it stresses, and we really have to watch hydrogen sulfide formation. As it's stressed, it does tend to produce a lot.
Yeah.
But
how do you manage that then?
Well, you know, you can, and we really try to avoid this, you can use copper fining for hydrogen sulfide.
Mm.
Not cool, really.
Yeah.
But also... you know, watch your nutrients really, really closely when you're doing that. So we hydrate, we rehydrate with GoFirm Protect when we pitch, and we do a very large pitch for our ice ciders, just about double the yeast that you would for a normal cider. Because once you get above 35 bricks, that cider is toxic to yeast. They're going to die the moment you dump them in. So you need a lot.
Because of the alcohol content in there. That's what
you're
talking about.
Yeah, the osmotic differential or whatever the fancy words are that I'm trying to say. But
you're a self-taught cider maker, but were you like, did you study science in
No, I have a degree in fruit and vegetable crops.
Well, that there's a lot of science in that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I just loved chemistry since I was born.
Yeah,
pretty
love
much.
That is perfect. Yeah, you're set up as a great career here.
But we do a large pitch, and then we'll do that with rehydration nutrients. 24 hours after that, we will add Fermade O to the blend. And typically you'll add 1.5 grams per gallon of Fermade O. But the Scott Labs, who sells that, used to recommend you do that at 30% completion of fermentation. They changed their recommendations now, and they say 24 hours after pitch, add half of that, add 0.75 grams per gallon. And then at 35% or 30% completion, use the other 0.75 grams to do a divided dose, because Fermade O breaks down slowly, and it takes time for the yeast to utilize what's in there versus DAP or Fermade K, which act a little bit faster.
Yep.
And so we'll do that first half dose, 24 hours after pitch. But what we're going to do is at 30% completion, we will not add the other 0.75 grams because we're stopping the cider early and I don't need it to ferment to completion. So I will take the remaining 60% of fermentation, 70% that needs to occur, and I will deduct my final bricks from that, and I will calculate what percentage of the remaining bricks actually is going to ferment. And oftentimes it's something like 30% of the sugar that's left in here needs to ferment. So I will take 30% of that 0.75 gram dose and add that to the cider. And once we get within 2 bricks of our target, it really starts to struggle. It does not have enough to go. And so by the end, our ice cider takes about 6 months to make, because by the last few weeks, we're fermenting point.
The yeast is hanging on like a cat.
We're fermenting 0.1 bricks per day.
Right.
And we watch that to make sure it's really steadily going along, because when it goes so slowly and the yeast are stressing, you risk them autolysing and the pH rising to a point where you can't stabilize it.
Absolutely. Yep.
So we keep an eye on that and bump up the temperature and add some special stuff, like Scott Lab sells this thing called Rescue. Mm-hmm. Which pulls poisonous fats out of, or fatty acids out of your wine or cider. And in this winter, actually, our pH did start to rise to a point where I wasn't comfortable with it. And we did use a dose of Rescue, and it dropped it right down and helped the fermentation continue healthily.
Good tip again.
Yep.
Yeah, lots of good tips there.
So when we're approaching our target, which is generally it's going to be 15 bricks, we'll just drop the temperature in the tank down to 34 Fahrenheit. And we can stop that fermentation immediately. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time, if we warm it back up again, it just never restarts.
But that's good, because that's hard to get a stable ice cider for folks who are trying it at home. You know, and if you take it out of the refrigerator, it starts re-fermenting.
Yeah. So, you know, the guys up in Quebec that do not use sulfites, I'm pretty sure that they just leave it frozen or refrigerated at the end of fermentation up to 9 months just to kill off any yeast that are in there. We only leave it cold for a couple of weeks, and we do use sulfites to stabilize our cider. And we sterile filter.
Great.
And we actually add sorbate as well. But below the recommended dose and below the flavor threshold. But, you know, sorbate effectiveness is to some extent pH dependent, but mostly based on the alcohol content. And with an ice cider, where ours is 12.5%, we can get away with using something below the sensory threshold. And you do have to watch sorbates in particular. Over about 6 months, they'll start to break down and taste like celery.
Yeah.
They're weird. And
people really try to avoid sorbate for that.
Yeah, we made a batch of ice cider a few years ago and used sorbate in it. And even today, we cannot taste the sorbate. If you use little enough, unless you are an expertly trained palate, which I hate to say this for our customers, but they are not. They're not going to taste it, even in 4 years. So the ice cider will continue to age and improve despite that. But for something lighter, I think that's where people really run into the problems, because there's so much going on in ice cider. It, like a any sweet something, it's going to cover up flaws. So it's just such a high-value product. It sells for $25 a bottle, and it takes 6 months to make, and we can only do it once a year.
Yeah.
I cannot afford to have it explode in the bottles.
No, you can't.
For what I submitted to Franklin County Cider Days, there was no sorbate in that. It was sulfited, probably not even properly, because I was still learning how to make cider.
Because you knew it was going to be drank right at that point.
If they all blew up, it didn't matter, because it was mine.
A bit different.
I didn't have to answer to customers.
No, it's a whole different scope at that point.
For the one I made at home, we let the fermentation trickle. We stopped it by dropping it into a freezer here at the farm, or a really cold refrigerator, essentially, and then sulfited it and sterile filtered it and put it in bottles, and it was fine. And it's still fine. I have bottles years later now that are still absolutely delicious.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, it's a beautiful presentation. We're going to be tasting some of that later on.
Oh, definitely.
Good. Yeah, and I'm excited to hear about the barrels, too. So I'm just going to say, you know, you just started going commercial on May. Being the scientific dude that you are, I can't wait to talk to you 5-10 years down the line and see where you are, because this is science, and art and science are in unison in many ways. You know, if you didn't have the passion, the passion is the art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know,
I don't just want to say that.
I cannot say that there is no art to this, but to me, the art is picking the flavors you want. It's the creative side.
Well, how hard is that? I mean, there's sommeliers, and then there are good sommeliers. There's good cider makers, and then there's damn good cider makers. And it's all about the blend and knowing and going out into the orchard and biting into the apple and saying, okay, this one is ready to pick now.
Yeah.
And because you're here, you get to do that. You're not, writing my juice order and getting it in and then you know,
yeah,
not knowing when those apples were picked. Yeah, it's a really different product, orchard-based cideries.
Yeah.
Wonderful stuff.
Yeah.
Yay. Thank you so much.
Yeah, for sure.
That was Chad Cook of Cider Hill Cellars in Amesbury, Massachusetts. If you want to hear his full chat, just go to episode 104. I'd like to thank the good patrons of Cider Chat who, via the Cider Chat Patreon page, help support this podcast and the following commercial cideries: Current Cider of Pennsylvania, Big Fish Cider Company in Monterey, Virginia, and Ramborn Cider Company in Luxembourg. Without their support, it'd be really hard to keep this chat going out weekly. If you believe that this podcast is worth your time, do consider becoming a patron of Cider Chat. You could do it for as little as $1 a month. Every penny counts here in Ciderville, and I know many of you know that so well. So please help today and support Cider Chat via Patreon. And just in case you haven't heard, there is a cider tourist trip happening during apple blossom season in West County in the United Kingdom. Don't delay. Sign up today at totallycider.com. Well, we are rolling out of 2017 and into 2018. It's been one heck of a year this past 2017, and I am so ready for that 1-8 to see what it brings our way out there in Ciderville. For the Medlars, Perry Pear, Mr. Quince, and all the Talking Palms, we wish you the very, very best in this coming new year. This is Rio Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Yeehaw!